Kanan Drew is a senior lecturer in legal tech at the Yack University of Applied Science in the Netherlands and the author of Lautoons, a series of legal comics. A driving force behind her work is her passion for making laws accessible and user-friendly for all.
Kandinsky también empezó estudiando derecho.
Hi, Anand, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, while doing research about you, we realized that it's something that we've seen over this last 3 years, interviewing lawyers and jurists, that many of us study law because we found injustice at a very young age. And so do you, because you were saying that after finishing your bachelor's degree at the London School of Economics, you started practicing law at the High Court in India, and there you found injustice and on the legal system itself, but also from your colleagues, no, within the sector, that would tell you, including judges, that you couldn't be there because you didn't have a family background in law. And from there, in the end, did you give up on litigation, or do you feel that you give up on litigation?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. To take a couple of steps back, after studying law in London School of Economics, in fact, one of the reasons why I decided to do law was feeling that, you know, there should be more equality and justice in the world, and that law has such a pivotal role to play in making sure that there is fair outcome for everyone and that everybody has equal opportunities to shine to their potential. After doing the law degree, I had a stint in McKinsey & Company, so basically a very, very kind of corporate consulting environment. And after that, and there are kind of long story short, I returned to India because I was very active in different extracurricular activity in my university. And LSE being at the center of London, there was a lot of interesting influences from the public sector, private sector. And some of my friends decided to join the public sector as well. And I felt, you know, that is a very interesting field to experience and get a lot of learning from early on. So I returned to India. I started to work for a think tank, which was at the Prime Minister's office, part of something called the Planning Commission. Now it's called the Niti Aayog, which is where a lot of policies are made and implemented at the national level and the state level. And there I saw that behind every policy, there is a law that kind of ultimately takes effect to make the policy sustainable and implementable at scale. And that's how I started to kind of starting practice in the court of law. And, you know, the legal system was very different in India compared to what I saw in the UK. And now, fair enough, you know, legal systems are rooted in the society and the local ethics and the norms that the society creates for itself. And things work very, very differently in countries of the global south and of global north, considering the legal, how can you say, the history is very different, and how the community has gathered itself is very, very different. So what I saw in India, and to answer your question, is that, of course, there is a system, but that is something that the British left us, and we are still trying to work around what could be the nice culmination of the community practices and also the formal system. Although, because of technology, a lot of efficiency has been brought. But when I started to practice, I used to feel that there could be certain inefficiencies that could be done away with, so that at least people can be made aware of their rights earlier on before they start to pursue their case or start to approach the relevant agencies within the legal system. And at least the process understanding can create more process fairness. As a practicing attorney, I used to see that clients didn't know where to go. Sometimes there will be a lawyer that they'll hire. Sometimes they'll not even know who to hire. So they'll just end up in the court premises asking around. And, you know, those kind of technical aspects can also be made simpler. This is where my consulting mind was, I think, taking over. And because I was very involved in some of the technological discussions, and that will come later in our conversation as well, I can imagine, I believe that technology can also play a role in making sure, of course, more awareness was created about the laws, and also the processes could be simplified for citizens. So that's when I felt, yes, more was needed. at the end of the day, law is a very traditional field, you know, one of the oldest professions in the world. And judges and lawyers have tended to be from a smaller community wherever you go. You know, now that I've worked in different continents, I see that it's a global thing, that it's a small community where if the father is a lawyer, the son will also, not as much anymore, people have more access. But yeah, and because I don't have a very strong family background in law, that was definitely a question as to how I would, you know, continue to climb the ladder. It's not very easy. And one has to kind of be very proficient, understanding of the human dynamics, the legal dynamics. And that's why I now kind of see in the hindsight that these questions were, at the time, I was taken aback that how can you ask this? Sometimes it's also the concern disguised in the wrong language, unfortunately, or just the right intention, but different generations. So yeah, that's how it played out at the time. And to kind of come to the final question about how did I leave litigation or whether I did, I ended up kind of wearing the startup hat more because I was inherently trying to solve some problems that I saw in the system. And I felt that the entrepreneurial or kind of innovation approach was a more positive way to contribute to the conversation rather than pointing fingers here and there that this is not okay, this is not okay. Okay, fair. If it's not okay, what are you doing about it? And what are the ways in which some solution can be generated? So I kind of have stepped away from litigation, but not from the law. The questions in my heart are still the same that I had even as a young entrepreneur then, or a young lawyer.
Yeah, it's so interesting and how important it is to find your mission and which role do you want to play. And I think you also made a good point about experiencing the private sector before moving to the public sector, because then you have a global overview of how the market works. And also in terms of choosing your job, if you want to work in the private sector or in the public sector, it's also interesting.
Yes, I think exactly. It's more important now than ever before. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, and I think also that what you mentioned about the being an industry or a sector where the family connections are very important, I think that's also we really need to work on in more countries more than in others, but still, like, for example, in Spain, this is super common, and sometimes this leads to unfair situations. So I think that's also a very important point, that sometimes you see that people that stay in some law firms are because or they are excellent, or because they have connections or belong to very powerful and rich families in the country. And it's interesting for the law firm to have them there, which I can understand in some way. But I think it's also a matter of giving equal opportunities to all the students independently of their background. No, so yeah, it's also a very tough topic.
That's very interesting, because now, you know, some of my students also say that especially law is such a glamorous field from outside. A lot of us kind of grow up thinking about law and being a lawyer as what we see in the series on streaming platform or what we see in the movies. But if you have that kind of a background, or if you see that from childhood around you, then you have a very different understanding of what is expected of you and what the job really entails. In a way, lawyers have also been, you know, the way judges conduct themselves, they don't go out much in the society, they don't mingle much because they have to be really objective. So that can also explain why it's a smaller clique. But then, yeah, newer ways in which justice should be done, especially now AI is so much proliferated. It's a very interesting world now that we live in, and newer solutions might emerge, maybe newer problems as well. We don't know.
Yes. I think we're starting to know that technology is not neutral, and that we really need to be sure that all the, for example, AI recommendation systems or profiling that the algorithms do and the companies do are also dangerous or can be dangerous. So that's super interesting as well. Yeah, we can talk about it later. So now we wanted to ask you as well about the Research Foundation for Governance in India that you created. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to know exactly what led you to found it and yeah, how did you manage to gain reputation in the legal sector and the trust of the government?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question too, because that's the next step in the journey after my litigation stint that I kind of did. Sometimes you have to be a little foolish, and sometimes you have to be a little kind of completely courageous without realizing the consequences. And sometimes things just happen naturally. So at the time, as I was asking the questions about, okay, you know, if processes have to be more transparent or people should be made more aware about the laws and rights that affect them, what could be done? There are legal aid centers, there are nonprofits, but how can we have a conversation about, you know, what are the helpful elements that we should make more in the legal system? And what are some of the things we can learn from or change? So just to start that discussion and dialogue within the society, I created this platform called Research Foundation for Governance in India. Research because I inherently believe that some sort of an understanding or creating that wider baseline of research and kind of, how can you say, creating that clear overview of how things stand at the moment is very necessary before you start to make solutions or start to think about this or that could work, could not work. And governance, because when I was at the LSC, I used to really see law as a very important facet of the society itself. So if you're talking of the law, it will be ultimately the entire system that will be affected in one way or the other. With that understanding, we started to organize discussions in the society. At the time, not knowing what would be the, response from people, what would people say or how they would they perceive or kind of come across to this platform. To our surprise, there was a huge excitement, especially because we realized a lot of people had things to say and contribute and had a clear understanding and opinion. Oftentimes, there is just a need for the platform. At the time, social media was available. This was 2009-10 that I'm talking about. But still, you know, meeting physically and having that conversation, nothing can beat that. That is also a human way to kind of come together and not be so polarized as we see today. So yes, the response was immediately very, very positive. There was a lot of media attention as well. A lot of state agencies started to get in touch and we also started to work with them more. As I said, I was already part of the Niti Aayog, the Planning Commission of India at the time. I had kind of some understanding of how to work with the public systems, not knowing what would be the response, because initially we were just saying that the legal system needed to make these changes or there should be more, flexibility for the young people from the legal background to understand the system rather than joining as a junior lawyer to a senior and not be financially very well off. So there are consequences to that as well. But there was a lot of welcome. In fact, people wanted to engage with the young generation, even at the policy corridors. So that was also very, very welcome realization that if you have the approach of working with the system, then kind of pointing always the faults, there is an openness. Of course, it takes time. Of course, it also takes understanding of how things get done, not be frustrated with it because there is a check and balance and sometimes bureaucracy takes so much longer. So as I'm kind of saying many things, very clearly we were doing the public consultation, the awareness part. Second was the research part. And third was the consultancy part, which is where we were working with the public sector agencies. There's a lot of enthusiasm from the young audiences. That means the young lawyers, students. And as I said, also from the public officials. We started to get projects to write some of the laws. So doing research on the legislative drafting at the state level, at the national level, working with the members of parliament, essential kind of departments, which will be also part of drafting committees. So that was a fantastic experience. I was very young at the time, you know, as I mentioned in the beginning, sometimes you just have to take that risk. And when you're young, you can take that risk. After a certain kind of stage in life, you start thinking and asking yourself so many questions that it'll be this inertia of making an action. So I think I'm very grateful that I just jumped at the idea that I thought is necessary to work on. And I just ended up working on it. And that's how it started. Maybe I could just stop there because there are also things I learned from there.
But, wow, yeah. That is impressive. And was it a quick growth or was it a natural kind of process?
Yeah, many opportunities started to come, you know. For example, as I mentioned, legislative drafting, there are cooperation partnerships, organizing bigger events. So I think learning to say no is something that I learned. I didn't do it very well at the time. But yeah, so the growth was quite fast. And it was so exciting because, you know, I started to get into, I was very young myself, just kind of graduated a couple of years back. But then even Ivy League students started to apply to work with us. And that was also the fact that, okay, wow, that there is definitely a demand for people to kind of contribute. as we were discussing in the beginning, law is something is so aspirational for young people, and they want to make a difference. But if there are platforms available where they feel very valued and heard, yes, they want to be a part of that journey. So because of that also, things started to move really, really fast. But at the same time, that is also not the best place to be. You have to really be strategic if you're playing for a longer time. And I kind of, now I'm thinking back, I could have done that better, because I wanted to do everything and everything fast, because bigger problems to solve, you know, country of billions of people, a legal system that matters so much. So I wanted to kind of change everything overnight, but things don't work that way. I realized that a sustainable financial model is also necessary for your activities to continue. I realized that kind of right, having the right team for the right kind of work that you want to do, having the right partners is very important. And all these are learning things that I've kind of along the way realized. But some I did well, some I didn't. And that's how my next kind of turn came to look at a more financially viable model through LawToons. And I know that we are going to be talking about that as well.
Yes, that's super interesting. I wanted also to ask you, how do you feel about that? Because do you think that we need more think tanks, or maybe the think tanks that already exist should try to somehow unite forces and not be like competitors, but work together for the same goal, if they have the same goal? Or if students, for example, have an idea of a think tank that doesn't exist, it's good to encourage them to try to create it. But if they have an idea of a think tank that maybe can be embedded in another think tank that already exists, should be better to try to work for them or
something. Yeah, you know, in the development sector, I've seen that there are so many players now and very few resources. So everybody's working for the same grants or same resources. It's really important now to have a right coalition, right partnership to work together. In terms of the think tank, I've also learned, and as I said, I have immense respect and kind of, you know, awareness that research is extremely necessary. But there is also this putting into action and the implementation part that sometimes think tanks kind of miss out on. Maybe it's really through right partnerships that you can have the right civil society initiatives, right universities, where you can make sure that whatever you put into kind of the words or the reports reach the right audiences. And now with social media and other, you know, online platforms, it's so much easier. So making it very simple, palatable, and reaching the right audiences is necessary. So, for example, you know, when I was working and drafting for ministries, not only in India, but even for outside throughout, when I was working for the Hague Institute for Innovation of Law and other developmental organizations, I was very close in contact with, it's the summary page. It's the first page that, you know, is very, very important of any report, because policymakers don't have a lot of time and attention is very limited. So how do you make it very, very simple, effective and palatable to who you are really designing for is necessary. So even if your report is 100 pages, it's just the first page and the key outcomes really matter. That's where the legal design really becomes important and empathy with your audience becomes very important. As I said, the dots really connect, but you're really, really focusing on your audience is necessary, even for think tanks.
Yeah, thank you for your view on that. And now we can move to the more creative part. I'm super excited about this. It's super interesting and super different for a lawyer, I would say. So yeah, just explain us, how did you come up with the idea of creating a legal comic a legal series of comics?
You know, I'm also one of those legal professionals who doesn't like reading a lot of legal text, because I feel like I really want the answer and I really want to make it very, very simple for myself to get as to what the judge is trying to say or what the law is trying to convey. And having practiced, I realized that people whose issues that we are fighting on or whose cases actually go to the courts, they have even kind of, you know, lesser patience with the law itself, because they really want the problem to solve. It could be a child custody case or it could be an inheritance case. And yes, of course, it's very interesting, the five different arguments, but at the end, what is applicable to me and what I should really know. So that was really always with me, that the law has to be simple. It has to be user-friendly. Of course, there's a lot of nuance to the law and that shouldn't be taken away. But there is this theoretical aspect and that is an applicable, especially in people's life aspect. So that's something that I always wanted to work on. One of the things that organically started happening through RFGA, the Research Foundation, is that when we were doing public awareness and the discussions, We were also invited at schools, and we were asked that, you know, make presentations to kids, because they anyway do some aspects of constitution in their sixth grade, and then that also continues later till the year nine. So we started to make design like small dramas and small kind of questions and answers. And kids would often come up with such interesting questions. They'll have such unique perspective on how the country could be governed and how that it would be a role play about somebody becoming a minister, and that minister will have issues to solve and how they will do it. So how they'll cooperate with one another, how they will compete with one another. Based on that, we realized that there was a huge demand for those workshops too, but we were very limited volunteers, so we couldn't reach everywhere. So through the Global Shapers community of the World Economic Forum at the time, at the local level in my city, Ahmedabad, we were discussing what could be the ways in which this could be scaled, that, you know, these workshops, and every person who would be part of this community will come up with different questions. And mine was, yes, how to scale simple legal information for people. So that's how, through brainstorming at that level, idea of a comic book came up. And then there was no turning back, because it sounded so simple, so intuitive. And a comic book is something that you can kind of send to people without you necessarily being around. So that's how me and my younger sister, Kelly, she was also part of the Research Foundation and one of the founding team members, and even in Lawtoons as a co-founder, we started to think about what could be the story that we will tell if we were to write a comic book on law, what laws we will simplify. And again, we started with the research of asking a lot of lawyers, judges, parents, starting to talk with the school teachers. Of course, we had a lot of experience working with school kids at the time. So through those discussions, we really formed up on the idea that, yes, let's create a comic book on law and let's call it Lawtoons. So that's how Lawtoons was born. And yeah, we've received such positive feedback because we crowdfunded for it. People paid for it to see it happen. So we are extremely grateful for this love and, you know, response that Lawtoons has received. And again, that's a business model that runs on itself, that we don't need to kind of, you know, be there. Even now I'm in The Hague, my sister is in Germany, but Lawtoons are being sold everywhere in the world through the partnerships that we have with our publishers. So yeah, that's worked out really, really interestingly. Of course, whatever we do is not enough, because more laws have to be simplified, more people to reach. But this is something that somehow I hope I come back to soon again.
We love it. And we love that your sister also studied law, right?
Yes, indeed.
She took a different path, yeah. One thing that I wanted to stress about what you said is that it's also important for a lawyer or a jurist to think big. And when you want to create an impactful solution or a project, or even your work, you want a higher impact, you have to think that it can be scalable. And that's really, really important. And that's what you did. You wanted to reach more and more people. And yeah, a comic was easy, the target was there. You found the need, you identified the need. So yeah, it's a really interesting thing. Yeah, I really like it.
We see it a lot in Spain, for example. I think that sometimes the average lawyer lacks entrepreneurship or business skills, and no one teaches you in university that you will have to set up probably your own firm. So it's super interesting that how come this is probably the most important thing that we will do in the future, and we never learn it in university. So I'm always very interested about lawyers who have this like business mindset. So
yeah, thank you. I'm quite critical of, you know, some of the things that we miss in the legal education, really. I think the empathy with the client is something that we can really do better in teaching, because we always go with solution that, you know, this and this needs to be done, but is it really helpful and applicable to the client? I think we really need to do more of that. And second, as you said, yeah, business skills, or just the basic of accounting, or that entrepreneurial, not everybody has to be an entrepreneur, but like just that problem-solving mindset is very, very important.
Yeah, and I was also interested in the creative process of the comic, like how or who created the pictures, like the drawing, who did that, or how did you choose how it was represented?
Yes, yeah, and also you were involved in the process.
Exactly.
So for example, as I mentioned, my sister and I wrote the story, and I was more like a project manager in making sure the funding is made available, how to kind of source everything. But when it comes to the artist, we were extremely lucky to partner with the National Institute of Design, the NID, because the director really liked the idea. And he said, you know, we have an animation department, so why don't you kind of come and meet us and work with some of our students? So it was one of the students of the National Institute of Design who made the pictures. And it's a very creative journey, as you rightly said, because as lawyers, our learning curve was very, very steep. From just the words, like, you know, the world of black and white and of words, looking through everything as visuals or everything as storytelling is a very different approach. But at the end of the day, the more you familiarize yourself with it, the more you realize that that's the intuitive way the human civilization has always learned and always communicated things. So visuals are extremely powerful. And that is something that kind of, personally, for me, looking into each character, how they will be designed, what they will say, you know, what color of clothes they'll wear, even for our protagonist, everything in terms of how they are thinking, who are their friends, not friends, what food they like, you know, what their everyday routine is like. So it's really kind of getting into the mind of the character to create a very successful comic. And I think we also kind of really relied on the intelligence of our readers, not assuming that they don't know anything, but in fact, assuming that they are very creative themselves, made us make better stories. And we took stories from our childhood as well, me and my sister. So some of our relatives or situations in childhood, that's very real. And that also helped create a very genuine feel. And at least that's the feedback that we received from people, that they've really appreciated, at least the creatives, and not just a very simple comic with like somebody just telling you 1, 2, and 3. But putting questions and then for you to figure out what the answer will be.
And do you have a special memory of that time? Like something that happened during the process or the first time you saw a kid reading the comic?
That was very, very nice when we used to go to school at schools and give copies of Lawtoons for kids to read, and they literally jump at it and kind of would not leave it. There are two memories that come to my mind. One of it is that, you know, in a very lower middle class background in one of the areas in the city where we gave some of the comic books, we got a feedback that there was a child of 5 years. The comic book was meant for 10 to 14, but the 5-year-old girl would every day come from school and just open the comic book and make her own story, even though she couldn't read very well. But that just went on to show us that kids really kind of make their own imaginative stories just from the boxes of comics, and they don't even have to read stuff. So that really validated the idea that kids are so imaginative that they need just the right tools to work around it. Similarly, there is this, you know, young sisters who made their entire walls of their house from the comic book. And then the third incident, in fact, there's the third one too, is that one of the judges that we went to and show Lawtoons, he also loved the story so much that he ended up kind of making such nice suggestions and really appreciated. That also warmed the heart that it's the across the age group that people liked this way of communication of law. Again, more is needed. We realized that there's a more investment needed. Making comics is not very, you know, reasonable. It is expensive because it's an art at the end of the day, and artists need to be compensated fairly. So yes, indeed, one of the ways we are thinking maybe we could continue to run the crowdfunding campaign, but even writing the stories is very creative, and I've gotten a little busy, I have to say, but I would love to make the Lawtoons 3 also at some point, because I still get letters from the parents and children that what really happened to the characters. So yeah, it is something that I can't wait to finish. Why the judgney, the ghost of a judge, is meeting the young kid for glue.
Yeah, that's super, super interesting. Yeah. I love it. And I also think it's super important to mention that we, at least the creative people or these people that think a bit out of the box, we sometimes need a job that let us have time for our own ideas and to work in our personal projects. And for example, if I think of my life, when I started working in a big law firm, I don't think I could have developed something like that, because you don't really have the time to think and to stop. And it's when you stop and when you are bored when these amazing ideas arrive. So It's also important to give you the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is also something that I see, you know, with some of my colleagues and some of my friends, especially from law school, that they also had very interesting ideas, but not time to pursue it. So, yeah, because they're so busy and having, you know, a lawyer lifestyle, as we all know, it takes quite a toll. And you're really tired at the end of the day. So not having that very demanding job, but having something that gives you enough time to pursue your creativity is a good idea. So I used to teach alongside most of the time I was running Law Tunes, especially because that was necessary to pay the bills, of course, and not feel very dependent on your creative idea for your survival, because then you are in a desperate mode. Then it's a survival mode. Sometimes it's necessary as well, but sometimes it takes time. Because I was working for the Hague Institute for Innovation of Law, I worked with a lot of startups in the law space. And I realized that scaling it is not as important as it is. It's not always very easy, the legal startups.
That's true. I don't know if, Marta, you want to continue with the next point or...
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. That talking about your university colleagues, you wrote on LinkedIn that sometimes you thought about giving up on your career, or you would wanted to choose their life because it, now looking back, it seems easy. They have an easy life, luxury life, but right now, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, that is so nice that you brought it up. In fact, there have been moments where I used to feel, you know, why am I doing this? And this is so creative and very interesting. But at the end of the day, as a lawyer, one can make a lot of money and one can have a very different lifestyle. But again, I think it's also a question of perspective, that there have been definitely the moments where I felt I wish I had just taken a very simple, like conventional career path of working in a big law firm and, you know, made a lot of money. But I think now I'm more and more of the opinion that doing many things makes lives more full, because then having some kind of an issue to solve professionally or personally, you have diverse experiences. And with that, you can even contribute more effectively to the conversation. So I think law is such a creative field. If you look at it, it gives you a very helpful analytical lens and understanding of the society, that with that, you can do more things than one. At the end of the day, we want to serve the society through making it a better world. But if we are really kind of in our own silo, then we are robbing ourselves of the opportunity to contribute more effectively with impact. So, yeah, I would say that in fact, now I don't feel as bad. I feel that, yeah, sticking to your own creativity and your own calling is hopefully worth it in the end. I think everybody has their own journey and has their own path marked for them. But I feel very grateful that I can work with artists, I can work with technologists, I can work with academics, I can work with public policy professionals. So grateful that, you know, I've been grateful to look at many, many sectors of the society and how they work and how they think. So yeah, I think that's been wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's also a matter of priorities and how your brain works, or what do you need to be like to feel fulfilled with your life. And sometimes, like, even though we might get paid much more in other industries or in other type of work, it would still not make us happy if we don't have the time to develop this podcast, for example, that we have, or the Law Tunes that you created. So I think, yeah, of course it depends on the person, but I think I'm also starting to think that it's worth it. But we still have a long journey to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. This is also such a creative platform. You know, you bring different people having their own interesting journeys in law. So it also contributes to people's understanding of what law can be. So it's super creative and it brings people together.
Yeah, that's the goal and the idea. We would love to meet, to create a meeting for everyone, or a conference or something, and that all the interested in the podcast can meet and know each other, because everyone is super interesting.
Yeah, and sometimes we feel really alone, like, is it only myself or there are other people that are feeling the same way? And that's the interesting thing about the podcast, that we find different people with the same interests, with the same willingness, you know, to create, to explore different things, to travel around the world. And that's, it's good to get together and find our the people that have the same mindset.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And going to the last point of the interview, now you're currently working as a senior lecturer in legal technology at The Hague University, and there you teach international regulatory and ethical discourse surrounding cybersecurity, AI, and the use of technology within the legal system. So we were also interested in how did you arrive there and why did you choose these areas of the law?
Yeah. So after kind of doing the work on Law Tunes, I also started, it's been a serial entrepreneurial journey. I started something called The Law For Me, which was bringing not only law and design, but law, design and technology together. And Law For Me got funded by the Hague Institute for Innovation of Law in 2014, actually. And then I kind of started to scale it, and the experience was not as successful as Law Tunes, I would say. But it taught me a lot, especially how technology can be integrated in the process of law. Eventually, in 2018, I ended up joining the Hague Institute for Innovation of Law. I came to the Netherlands. And as I mentioned before, I started to work with a lot of startups in the space of law, essentially also working with technology. To see, you know, how they are scaling, what kind of issues that they are trying to solve, and how law and technology essentially interact. And I saw that even through the platform of Legal Hackers, it's a global community connecting legal rebels, exactly the kind of people we mentioned, who feel lonely and who feel like, you know, what else I have to do and contribute to wearing the lawyer and innovator or creative person hat. So that's where my interaction with law and technology started. And when this opportunity came up to join the Hague University as a senior lecturer in law and tech, it's an area where I've always wanted to kind of contribute, considering creating the lawyers with that innovation mindset or that entrepreneurial mindset. Not, again, not everybody has to be an entrepreneur, but those skills of business, of kind of soft skills, working with people, problem solving, looking at law from the societal lens of human lens, that kind of was an area that I found extremely important. The entrepreneurship and justice is also an interesting combination if you really kind of, you know, look at how many different initiatives are going in the world. So when I joined this, you know, post as a lecturer, looking at these issues, I was really overjoyed, because that's when, in fact, more conversations started to take place around artificial intelligence as well. The Hague University has a thriving data science and AI department, IT department, which has to do a lot of kind of conversations and curriculum development on IT skills, cybersecurity research unit. So as somebody who's working in the law faculty, but having these different conversations, it's fairly exciting, because now more than ever before, we need people from different disciplines to come together to create solutions for the society. And that applies as much to in the classroom, developing the right curriculum, giving practical hands-on learning to the students to make them future-ready professionals. So I think it's a great opportunity to combine all these interests of mine. The whole regulation aspect of how newer technologies can be governed is also a great learning experience for me, because there is so much in Europe that is developing in the regulatory space around new technology that, yeah, it is kind of really a nice standard format for, or a best, one of the best practices in the world to learn from. So, of course, while looking at how AI can help the process of law or what are some of the dangers to watch out for, what kind of regulations are also needed for the technologies that are there and the technologies that are yet to come is so exciting, as you can imagine, for every lawyer right now. So that's what I do right now. And I can't wait to, you know, continue these conversations in the university.
And how I'm also working in right now in my PhD, I'm doing it in a multidisciplinary team. And we have engineers, we have economists, and we have lawyers. And it's super interesting because the outcomes are much richer and much more interesting, because we bring the perspectives of everyone involved. But I'm also feeling very challenged by the fact that I have to learn programming skills, because I have to be able to communicate with them. And even though it's true that they also have to learn the legal language, because they have to also learn how to communicate with us, it's not only like a unidirectional communication. But I wanted to know, how do you see that, and how do you feel that in the future it will become very important that also lawyers understand or have these programming skills?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I feel that different disciplines have their own languages, even though we are all speaking English, for example. It's just the lens that is very different. You know, somebody looks at it from the right side, somebody from the left side. It's like, and a very different image appears. What is really needed is to kind of come somewhere in the center where at least there are better communication platforms across the engineers or the lawyers or behavioral economists or public policy professionals. To at least come to a common language is a lot of work to be done. But I'm very hopeful that AI itself can be that platform to kind of make those non-translatables translatable, where at least people can start to empathize with one another, and the journey that they take, the kind of world that they come from, their understanding of different issues. Because at the end of the day, we are trying to solve the similar problems, and the challenges are similar. But if somebody is looking at from the micro lens and somebody from the macro lens, there is no way you can kind of get around to one another. There are also clear redundancies taking place, right? Because with AI, and at least even with the large language models, coding is really possible and made much easier. Similarly, written language is also kind of a lot of the tasks that people in research or in law will do is made easier. And it's just the beginning. It's going to be more and more nuanced and more sophisticated. So kind of in the years to come, what we'll have to do is to at least retain what is more human. And that's where we can kind of align more with one another. And I don't know the direction where we will go, but perhaps those, you know, sectoral differences will start to merge more, because technology will overtake so much of our work. And those are, of course, very important conversations to have. But then what will be the role of human beings, and where we can connect more with one another? Then that could be much easier in the future. Maybe. I'm optimist, I'm saying easier.
Yeah, so you're like an optimist technologist, no?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
So thank you, Kanan, really, for taking this mission of changing how we learn law and how we have to be thinking about what is on the market right now, and to find the right allies for our work. And I think we'll call it a day. It was a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much. We hope you enjoyed. And yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely to talk to both of you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And hopefully we will see each other in the ACK or in Barcelona if you go there someday.
Yes, absolutely. And more power for your work of the podcast. And yes, wish you more and more growth and lovely episodes and lots of good wishes from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And for those of you who listen, remember, Kanan also started by studying law.